1990 changed our history. We watched the smoke rise over Port of Spain as the Red House fell under siege. It was not just a coup attempt. It was a rupture in the social contract. For 6 days, the capital held its breath while the state negotiated with its own shadow. When the guns finally went silent, the scars remained visible on the walls and in the psyche of the nation. But the true damage was not in the fire. It was in the silence that followed. We chose to look away from the rot at the edges of our society. We allowed neglect to become a policy. Today, the streets of Trinidad do not just tell a story of crime. They tell a story of a state that retreated, leaving a vacuum where the law used to be. This is the history of how we built an underworld by failing to build a flat nation. This is The Cost of the Blind Spot. Chapter 1. The Fractured Foundation. July 27, 1990. 2 p.m. The heat in Port of Spain was heavy. It was a Friday. People were thinking about the weekend. They were not thinking about revolution. Then the earth shook. A car bomb detonated outside the police headquarters. The building did not just burn, it collapsed. This was the opening note of a symphony of chaos. Members of the Jamaat al-Muslimin stormed the Red House. They took the Prime Minister hostage. They took the Parliament hostage. They took the state's dignity hostage. On the other side of town, another group took over the state-run television station. For the first time in our history, the face of the state was replaced by the face of an insurgent. We must understand what led to that afternoon. It did not happen in a vacuum. The 1980s had been hard. The oil boom had ended. The money had dried up. Poverty was not just growing, it was deepening. In the gaps where the state failed to provide, other groups stepped in. They provided food. They provided discipline. They provided a sense of belonging that the official government did not offer. The state saw them as a nuisance. They were a blind spot. Until they were sitting in the Prime Minister's chair with a gun. Inside the Red House, the air was thick with the smell of gunpowder and fear. The Prime Minister was shot in the leg. He was told to resign on camera. He refused. Outside, the city was being looted. Businesses were burned to the ground. The police force was in disarray because their brain, the headquarters, was a pile of rubble. The army took positions around the city. They set up a perimeter. But they could not just shoot. The entire leadership of the country was inside that building. It was a stalemate. It was a public display of the state's fragility. The negotiations lasted 6 days. The insurgents wanted an amnesty. They wanted a change in government. They wanted a seat at the table. The state, desperate to save its leaders, gave them what they wanted. An amnesty was signed. The insurgents walked out of the Red House and the television station. They were arrested, but the document was their shield. The courts eventually upheld that amnesty. They were set free. This was the moment the foundation cracked. When the state signs a deal with those who bombed its police, the message is clear. The law is flexible if you have enough firepower. The people in the hills of Leventil and the back streets of East Port of Spain were watching. They saw that the state could be brought to its knees. They saw that violence was a viable tool for negotiation. We tell ourselves that the coup failed because the insurgents did not take over the government, but we must ask ourselves if the state truly won. The physical damage to Port of Spain was repaired. The Red House was eventually restored, but the institutional damage was permanent. The police force never fully recovered its authority. The trust between the people and the protectors was severed. We began to see the rise of private security for those who could afford it. For those who could not, there was only the street. The state retreated to the boardrooms and the gated communities. It left the vulnerable areas to fend for themselves. This was the birth of the modern underworld. Neglect is not a passive act. It is a decision. Every time a school was left to rot, we made a decision. Every time a youth program was defunded, we made a decision. We decided that some lives were worth less than others. We decided that as long as the violence stayed in certain postcodes, it was not our problem. But the problem with blind spots is that they do not stay empty. They fill up with resentment. They fill up with ambition. They fill up with people who have nothing to lose. By the end of the 1990s, the energy of the coup had migrated. It was no longer about religious revolution, it was about power. Pure, raw, economic power. The drug trade was moving through our waters. The state was still looking at the old maps. They were still fighting the old wars. They did not see the new structures being built in the shadows. They did not see the young men who were tired of waiting for a state that never came. The foundation was fractured. The house was still standing, but the ground was shifting beneath it. If the state cannot protect its own parliament, how can it protect a mother in Morvent? If the state negotiates with bombers, how can it demand respect from a petty thief? These questions were left unanswered as we entered the new millennium. We chose the comfort of the status quo over the hard work of reform. We chose to believe that 1990 was an anomaly. It was not. It was a preview. The state had shown its hand. It was a hand that could be forced. The first chapter of our modern history ends with a quiet city and a simmering street. The fire was out, but the embers were being fanned by a new kind of leader. A leader who did not need a mosque or a political party. A leader who only needed a neighborhood and a blind spot. The question was no longer if the state would return to these areas. The question was, what would happen when the state tried to buy its way back in? The amnesty was a surrender disguised as a peace treaty. It told every aspiring strongman that the state was willing to pay a price for silence. This price would only go up. As the 90s ended, a new system was emerging. It was a system where the government and the gunmen would become business partners. The state was about to learn that you cannot rent peace from the people you have neglected. Chapter 2. The Outsourced Authority. As the calendar turned to the year 2000, the oil prices began to climb. Money started to flow back into the national treasury, but the money did not go toward healing the fractures. It went toward managing the symptoms. The state realized it had lost control of the urban centers. Instead of reclaiming them through justice and social development, it chose to outsource its authority. This was the era of the community leader. The term community leader is a polite way of saying gang boss. These were men who controlled the blocks. They controlled the labor. They controlled the votes. If they could keep these men happy, they could keep the neighborhoods quiet. They created social programs. They called them CPEP and URP. These were meant to provide short-term employment for the unemployed. They were meant to clean the drains and cut the grass. Instead, they became the primary funding source for organized crime. We must be clear about how this worked. Government contracts were awarded to companies controlled by these leaders. The money was paid for work that was rarely done. This money was then used to buy weapons. It was used to recruit more young men. It was used to solidify the leader's grip on the community. The state was effectively paying protection money to its own citizens. We were taxing ourselves to arm the people who were terrorizing us. This was the height of state neglect. By providing the funds but removing the oversight, the state signaled that it did not care what happened in these areas as long as it didn't spill over into the malls or to business districts. The community leader became a judge, the jury, and the employer. If you needed a job, you went to him. If you had a dispute with a neighbor, you went to him. The police became an invading force, only entering the area to conduct raids or collect bodies. They were no longer part of the community. They were the enemy. The impact on our history cannot be overstated. We raised a generation of children who saw the man with the gold chain and the illegal firearm as the only provider. They saw the state as a distant, uncaring entity that only appeared when it wanted to take someone away. This was not a failure of resources. It was a failure of will. The state had the money. It chose to spend it on maintaining a fragile peace rather than building a lasting justice. As the community leaders grew more powerful, they grew more ambitious. They were no longer content with just government contracts. They moved into the transnational drug trade. Trinidad became a major transshipment point for cocaine heading to North America and Europe. The wealth in the underworld exploded. The gap between the official economy and the shadow economy vanished. The money was washed through legitimate businesses. It was washed through the construction sector. It was washed through the very institutions meant to regulate it. The blind spot had become a black hole. It was pulling everything into it. The corruption reached into the heart of the protective services. Officers were on the payroll of the gangs. They provided information. They provided protection. They even provided weapons. When the state tried to crack down, the information leaked before the boots hit the ground. The state was fighting a war against a shadow that it was also feeding. We saw the result in the murder rate. It didn't just rise, it spiked. The violence was no longer about territory. It was about prestige. It was about maintaining a flow of state funds. If a rival group tried to move in on a contract, people died. If a leader felt disrespected, people died. The streets became a battlefield where the rules were written in blood, and the state was a spectator. The government tried to intervene with state of emergencies and special task forces, but you cannot arrest your way out of a problem you are subsidizing. Every time a leader was killed or imprisoned, three more rose to take his place. The structure was too profitable to fail. The state had created a monster that it could no longer control. The community leader system was a betrayal of every citizen who believed in the rule of law. This neglect was not just about the poor. It was about the integrity of the nation. When the state abdicates its responsibility to provide safety and opportunity, it loses its legitimacy. We became a country of two worlds. One world of high-rises and international investment. Another world of zinc fences and funeral processions. The distance between them was growing, and the bridge was made of government checks and empty promises. By the middle of the decade, the masks were off. The gangs were openly challenging the state. They were staging protests. They were blocking roads. They were demanding more money, more contacts, and more autonomy. They knew the state was afraid of them. They knew the state needed them to win elections. The community leader had become a political kingmaker. The chapter of outsourced authority ends with the nation realizing that the peace it bought was a lie. The violence was spreading. The corruption was deep. The state had surrendered its monopoly on force to men who answered to no one. The bill for a decade of neglect was coming due. The next evolution of the underworld would be even more dangerous. It would not just be about money. It would be about an identity that rejected the state entirely. The shadow was no longer just following us. It was leading the way. Chapter 3. The Siege of Silence. In the current era, the underworld has matured. It is no longer just a collection of neighborhood gangs. It is an industry. We have entered the age of the supergang. Two main factions now dominate the landscape. We call them the Muslims and Rasta City. They are not religious movements, they are corporate entities of violence. They have their own logos, their own music, and their own laws. They have built a culture that celebrates the very neglect that created them. The state remains in a defensive crouch. The blind spots have expanded. In many areas, the police do not patrol at night. They stay in their stations, waiting for the calls they know they cannot answer. The community leader of the past has been replaced by the area commander. These commanders are younger, more volatile, and better armed. They use social media to broadcast their power. They use music videos to recruit the next generation. They have turned our history into a soundtrack of defiance. We must look at the human cost. The murder rate in Trinidad and Tobago is among the highest in the world. But these are not just numbers. They are our sons. They are our brothers. The vast majority of victims and perpetrators are young men under the age of 30. This is a demographic collapse in real time. We are losing our future to a war that has no end goal other than survival and status. The neglect has moved from the physical to the psychological. We have become desensitized. We read the headlines about triple murders and hits as if they are weather reports. We have accepted a level of violence that would be unthinkable in a healthy society. This silence is the ultimate victory of the underworld. When the people stop being outraged, the criminals have won. The state continues to try the same failed tactics. They build more prisons. They buy more armored vehicles. But they do not address the root. They do not address the fact that a boy in a hotspot has a better chance of getting a gun than a decent education. They do not address the fact that the community leader system is still quietly functioning under different names. The corruption remains a cancer in the protective services, ensuring that the big fish are never caught, while the small fry are discarded. We must ask ourselves what our history will say about this time. Will it say we were a nation that surrendered to its own shadows? Will it say we allowed a minority of violent men to dictate the life of the majority? The tragedy of Trinidad is not that we lack the resources to fix this. We are a wealthy nation. The tragedy is that we have lost the belief that it can be fixed. We have let the blind spots become our identity. The impact of this neglect is felt most by those who cannot leave. The families who have to dive under their beds when the iron starts to bark. The children who have to walk past murals of fallen gangsters on their way to school. This is a siege of silence. It is a siege where the enemy is not at the gates but within the walls. The state's failure to protect these citizens is a historical crime that we are still committing every single day. The rise of Trinbop music is a symptom of this reality. It is a raw, unfiltered expression of the life the state tried to ignore. It is gritty, it is violent, it is real. To ban it or condemn it is to miss the point. It is the voice of the vacuum. It is what happens when you tell a group of people for 30 years that they do not matter. They will create their own world, and they will make it as loud and as terrifying as they can. We are at a crossroads. The old models of policing and social intervention have failed. The community leader partnership has only led to more blood. The state must decide if it wants to be a sovereign power or a business partner to the underworld. It must decide if it is willing to do the hard, generational work of reclaiming the streets through genuine investment and justice, or if it will continue to look away until the blind spot consumes the entire island. The history of the Caribbean is a history of resistance. But today, the resistance is internal. We are resisting the urge to give up. We are resisting the idea that this is just how it is. The cost of our neglect is written in the obituaries and the empty chairs at the dinner table. It is a cost that is becoming too high to pay. Our history is not just about what happened in 1990. It is about what we do tomorrow. The shadow is long, but it only exists because of the light we refuse to turn on. We must stop being afraid of what we will find in the dark. The state may be blind, but the people are not. We see the cost. We feel the weight. The silence is breaking. The question is, who will be left to speak when the shouting stops? Would you like me to develop the next episode in this series, or focus on a specific time period mentioned here?